was an interview with Mr. Robert T. Whitten. He was the Justice of the Peace in Odom, Texas for 7 consecutive terms, but has since retired. His father is Mr. W. E. Whitten, who brought his family to Bishop in early 1960. The elder Mr. Whitten became one of the leading civic leaders of the community. This interview was conducted on August 9, 1973 at the Whitten home in Odom, Texas. The interviewer is Rosa Maria Ramirez.
My name is Bob Whitten. I live in Odom, Texas. In December 1916, my father moved his family to Bishop. At that time, Bishop was only about 6 years old. It was built by F.C. Bishop, and only about 1,000 people lived there. Mr. Bishop built churches, store buildings, and a nice school, and business was good there in the town because the roads were bad, and there were very few automobiles, and people could not travel far to trade. Mr. F.C. Bishop had one brother, E.A. Bishop, who lived in Bishop, and was he was not wealthy, but was a good man. Mr. F.C. Bishop is buried in the cemetery there, and on his tombstone is inscribed, "The Landman." He died a pauper. Before he died, Mr. Bishop came through one day, and he knew my dad well. He had lots of dealings with him. My father helped him out on land deals, and told him where the land was, and section number and everything. So he came through hitchhiking, thumbing his way one day to the valley, and he asked my dad to lend him $10, which he did. And then a few days he came back through and he paid my dad the $10 back. And I didn't ever see Mr. Bishop after that, but they say his daughter lives in Laredo, and his wife, the last I heard, lived in San Antonio. And
is it true that Mr. Bishop was buried with money that was collected in?
Yes, ma'am. They had to make up money, and then some of his friends bought a tombstone because he and his wife had separated several years before that. He gave the park to the city of Bishop, with the understanding that it would be used exclusively as a park. But it was a park, originally it was a beautiful park. It had the artesian wells and a nice pavilion for band concerts, and it had also had a nice swimming pool where all the kids went to swim. But in later years, kids threw rocks in the artesian well and stopped them up, so the park kept going from bad to worse. And so one day Mr. Bishop came through and he told my dad, said, "I'm going to take the park away from Bishop because they're not using it for what it's intended to be used." And so my dad went to the City of Fathers and told him I better do something about it, and Mr. Bishop was going to take the park back. And it consists of several acres. So the city council got busy and offered him $1,000 for a quick claim deed. So his wife had signed it too. He said, "All right, if you'll let me have the deed, I'll take it up and get her to sign it." And she wouldn't sign it, so he came back and he told him, said, "I'll sign it if you give me $500. So they paid Mr. Bishop $500, and eventually Ms. Bishop signed the quit claim too. I really don't know what they paid her. But the park became permanent in the property of the city of Bishop.
What was going on at the park that made him want to take it away from the city?
Not anything except he could sell it. If he got it back, he could sell it for quite a bit. And it's in the deed that it would be used exclusively for a park, you see, and they wouldn't do it. They used it for cotton weighing station and everything. It's used for everything except a park. And so he knew that, and so he figured he'd get that back, he'd sell it for $7,000. But he was so broke that even $500 tempted him, and he signed a quit claim for $500. And on account of the small, bad roads, there were small schools east and west of Bishop, and they were mostly one-teacher schools. A great many people had either mule, dog wagons, or surreys. There were hitching posts at the churches and also downtown. Lots of people would put chairs on their wagons and drive their drive to town or church. I don't know whether you ever seen him. It's amazing. It's funny. The bishop didn't have much crimes that time. We had a deputy sheriff in a one-room jail. Let me tell you about the jail crime. And Mr. Davis was the deputy sheriff, and one day, one Sunday night, he locked a Negro man up in the little one-room jail. And along early hours of Sunday morning, the jail caught fire. And from inside, evidently the man smoking had set his mattress on fire. And the fire bell rang, and a bunch of us went down there. But they couldn't find Mr. Davis to get the lock open. He's the only one that had the key. So the nigger man was standing there at the door screaming and hollering. But he finally was succumbed by smoke and fire, and burned into a crisp. All over the Negro town the next morning, what we call a Negro town, and a Negro settlement, and on Ed Coyle's front porch, they had this man's torso in a tub, and it was burned crisp. It looked like barbecued meat. I didn't see much of his legs, arms, or head, but I do remember seeing the torso laying there in the tub. But nothing done about it. They claimed it was an accident, so the man never was taken to court or anything about it.
Do you have any idea why he was in jail?
For drunkenness. He was drunk, Mr. Davis told us later. We didn't have much crime as I was growing up there. We had
you had a bank robbery once, didn't you?
Well, that is later. Yes, one day the bandit, some men came in there and robbed the First State Bank. But we had a man there, he thought more of money than he did his life, Bill Holland, and so he had a gunfight with him, and several people hiding behind posts and telephone posts, and this bandit shooting at him, and Bill went out on the street and exchanged fire with him, but they didn't get much. They got out of town pretty quick. They went on to Kingsland and shot him, as he was looking for him, he shot and killed Mr. Barnhill down there out close to the King Ranch. He was a night watchman, and they just shot and killed him. There wasn't much for young people to do in those days. We had class parties, Sunday school parties, and Boy Scout hikes. That's about the, but none of us that I can remember ever used dope, alcohol, or drugs. There was prohibition on at that time, and a lot of home brew made for a lot of it. Nearly everybody had the home brew, especially the German people, because they liked the beer. But Daddy never see any of them drunk on the street. And about three bad crop years, most people who had cars left them in their garages and switched to buggies or wagons. There's a few people well enough financially kept the cars. In 1918, when the war was going on, the influenza epidemic hit. It Bishop did the entire nation. We had only one doctor, and no medicine was known to arrest the disease, and lots of people died. They had a camp outside of Bishop there where people had no hospital facilities, and so they make it easier on the doctor where they set up tents and little houses. Housed the people who weren't able, had to have a doctor so he could attend them all at one time, as he makes the round. But lots of people died. I had several friends that died there, and several soldier boys that brought back died. And I told you about the park. Corpus Christi was a village of about 20,000 people, but getting to go there once in a while was a treat we enjoyed. They had what they called a pier cafe. It was built out over the water, and we'd go out over, walk out there. It's about a quarter of a mile to the cafe, and the water slashing up under the canoe. And of course, everybody, one of us had to eat at the pier cafe because it served good fish, and I don't know, just treat for we kids that never had been outside of Bishop much.
Did you go shopping in Corpus?
Yes, ma'am. That was something when the roads were good, but people go there to buy their furniture and a lot of bought the clothes. But most of the grocers was about the same price at home as well over there, and they went in the supermarket, just grocery stores, and you could buy crackers in the barrel and pickles in the drum and at home, and they wasn't used to going to Corpus for that, but for clothes and things like that, most people did go out of town. And
did you travel by car?
When you could, you traveled by car. And I'll tell you what it interested me was the trains. We had trains from Nevada to Houston, and they were just packed every time. And on Sunday evening, half the town, Bishop, nothing else to do, we'd all ride down the depot and watch the train come in and leave. That's the truth. It was a sight. I bet there'd be 100 cars down there, people, just waiting for the train to come in and waiting to leave and see the people unload and get back home. But they were packed. It was hard. You had standing room only in the train in those days. But that's about the only way they was to go from Nevada to here, you know, where you know. And trains did a rushing business, and the depot was full all the time, and they weren't any place people staying, so they got stranded. Basically, they slept in the depot. You go down and pass there at night, and there'd be people muddled up in the corner sleeping with something over them. And let's see, we had in high school, we had a lot of fun. We didn't have a coach in high school. We had no gymnasium, no grandstand. People ran up and down the field with the football when we played. The crowd would go with the ball. But we always had good athletic teams, seemed like. We played teams from Robstown, team from Corpus Christi mostly. We had no buses, so people would get the teams there and a few cars that were available. I graduated from high school in 1923 and farmed for 2 years in Bishop. In 1925, South Texas State Teachers College, did you know that? Now he and I opened. Coach L.J. Smith asked my brother Jim and me to enroll, which we did in September 1925. We started football practice with about 20 recruiting. We had no schedule the first year. We played local teams. In 1926, I heard the Texas Relays lost and won fourth place in the 16-pound shot put competition. We had only one building on the campus with about 300 students. We all knew each other personally, and everyone knew all the professors. Dr. J.R. Manning, now mayor of Kingville, was a professor of business administration at that time. Frank Warner was the captain of the first football team. I was elected by the team as captain of the 1926 team. 1926, we played St. Mary's of San Antonio, Shrine Institute of Kerrville, and a few others. There were no motels in those days, so we stayed in the school dormitory. Coach said that there were no funds available for luxuries or sometimes meals, so we paid for them, some of them ourselves. I received a severe injury to my right leg in 1927 game and lost the use of my leg and foot forever. I missed so many classes I went through from college and never finished. Since leaving college, I have been in business with my brother, Jim, the last 35 years here in Odom, Texas. For 22 years, I was a judge here in San Patricio County, Texas. I retired undefeated after 7 elections. At the present time, my wife and I are enjoying the fruits of our labors.
Could you tell us a little bit about Mother Lane? Do you remember anything about
that? Yeah, Mother Lane was a heathen doctor, and she came in there and set up practice there. Of course, there wasn't any law then, I guess, to prevent her from waxing her trade. So people came from all over the United States. The bishop is known then as the healing capital of the world, I guess, because they come in there and they left healed. And she stayed there for several years until finally they put her out of business. And I don't know what came of her.
Do you remember where she was from, or do you remember
her name? No, I don't know. I don't remember that. I just remember Mother Lane, and that's all I remember about her. But the anti-German feelings in Bishop at that time was pretty high. I mean, if I was a kid, and I remember the Germans were prohibited from talking German on the street to each other. A lot of them were old, and about the only language they knew was German. They'd been here all their lives, but they could talk a little English, but not too much. But I've seen people walk up when two old friends of mine were talking and hit them in the mouth with a fist for talking German on the street. And those Germans are about as good American citizens, both more liberty bonds and war bonds than most of us around there. And
Could you tell us something about the Ku Klux Klan that practices their ceremonies or their location?
We didn't get that on our phone, did we?
No.
Well, the Ku Klux Klan, it was a scary organization. I remember children would used to cringe when they'd come by in their white suits. They went, if a man was a Klan member, when he died, the Klan was holding a funeral service at the graveyard. Looked like a bunch of white geese out there running it. They had the Klan meeting up on the hill about half a mile from our home, and they'd light a big bonfire and they call this up to living, and we'd all go down and sit outside the fence and watch them. Of course, they wasn't doing anything, but milling around out there, and I guess, I don't know what else they're doing before we get close enough to see. But on lots of days on Sunday, we'd go to church, and during the middle of the sermon, they're singing, about seven, eight of them with their white garb on, would walk in there and walk down to the pulpit and drop an envelope of money in the collection plate and walk on out the front door, disappear out there. Nobody followed them. But it got to be either you were a Klan or you wasn't, and they got, I don't remember too many fights among citizens, but most of the good people didn't have anything to do with the Klan. I guess there's a few good in it, but most of them's in it to hide the meanness, I think, because I knew a lot of them, and they didn't amount to much in my estimation. I know I wouldn't want to have anything. If I had to hide my face to do something, I don't want to have anything to do with it. But that's what they did. They hid their face and did the dirt underground. We used to have tent revivals, and I've seen preachers come in there. I forget the name of some of those high-minded preachers, but they threw chairs across the pulpit there in the tent, and they'd jump up and down off a chair and jump back down on the... But people, I guess, enjoyed it, so they did a lot of hand-clapping, and they stayed 2 or 3 weeks at a time. But to me, it's funny, but a bunch of us kids had laughed out and watched these preachers go through gyrannics, but I tell you, it's really funny to watch them. But I guess it did a lot of good. I don't know. What else can I tell you?
Oh, can you tell us a little bit about the labor? What kind of, people that you employed for labor?
Well, most of the people were, laboring people were Latin Americans, and most of the land, when we came to Bishop, was 1,000 acres. You know, it was been timberland, and they got those big steam breaking plows and semi-break it and tear it up the roots, and then the Latin people come in contract to dig up those roots by hand, mechanically with their hands, and they'd pile those roots and burn them. But they worked for pittance. Of course, money was worth a lot of more than it is now. $1 was worth $2 then, and it's worth about 20 cents now. But we had a lot of fun. We had those fiestas, and they'd come in there, and they'd set up games of chance, and have tamales, and well, all kind of Latin food, Mexican food. And boy, did we have a time. We stayed out there with the clothes on Saturday night, and watch them dance, and we're going. And I mean, it's just fun. It's more fun in those days to me than it is now. Everybody was free and easy, you know. And there's a lot of crap games and gambling games going on Saturday night and Sunday. It lasts all night Saturday night and on Sunday. I remember especially one farm out there they called the Bartlett Farm. Had a big shed that covered a half an acre. They'd have 25 and 30 crap games going once a time. Just money you never saw. Money was plentiful then, you know, back in the 20, early in the 21, 22, on up through there. And we made good crops and got 40 cents a pound of cotton. And boy, crap games, man alive. You never saw much money in your life change hands. But it was fun. I enjoyed it. I shot a few crap, not many. I could never shoot crap. I could lose it every time. You still do, my cheek. But let's see.
Can you tell us a little bit about the churches? You know, what was the church like?
The churches, they paid the preacher, I think, about $60 a month if they had the money to pay him. If they didn't, they paid him off in chickens and pigs. They didn't have a paid secretary. My dad was secretary of Sunday school for 30 years and been a deacon for over 50 years, Baptist church there. Well, we had one paid man, and that was the preacher. The rest of it was three grannies, Sunday school teachers, and we had a choir leader, and just a local man, you know, lead the choir. But had a lot of soul saving, a lot of good preachers. But the main churches at that time was the Baptist and the Methodist. The Catholic wasn't very active. Church of Christ was pretty active, but they had an epidemic in the Church of Christ, and 10 or 15 of the people died of tuberculosis in the Church of Christ there. But they had a lot of, seemed like to me, had a lot of protracted meetings because my folks there didn't want to miss a time of church opening. It seemed like I was going to church all the time. But I guess it's the best thing. But I don't know, we used to have tent meetings and we'd get out in the cool of the, you know, it'd be dew fall, be cool. You lay down on the grass and the rest of we all go to sleep. But we had to drive home then at night in a wagon, all of us piled up there, and four of us kids, and we piled up and back in and sleep on the way home. But well, I enjoyed my childhood and growing up in Bishop. Wonderful experience. It's not, it wasn't a hurry as burly as it is now. Everybody, you hardly know your neighbor. Everybody knew everybody else in this family, and I don't like that anymore. I wish it were. Anything else? An automobile. There wasn't too many cars when we left Grand View in 1916 in December. And the first day we traveled to Austin, traveled Austin, Texas, and then stayed all night. And we had a dog with us named Tootsie. And we got loose that night, and the next morning we couldn't find him. And Austin's hilly, so we run up down the streets all over Austin, calling Tootsie, Tootsie. And then finally he came and ran up to the car. So the second night we drove all day and got to Corn City. And dirt, sandy road, dirt road, all dirty. So we went to private home there and had to sign rooms for it. And my father and some of us went out to eat. And brother Jim went in the room. He was tired, so he's going to bed. And he locked himself in the room. And we when he came back, he was asleep. And we had a heck of a time getting him up to get in the room. We spent about 30 minutes getting him awake. But we stayed out there part of the night, then the rest of the night in Farm City. The next day, then, it's only 50, 60 miles from here to Farm City. We drove the next day then and got in Bishop late in the evening, the third day. 398 miles took us 3 days to do it. And my dad had bought a farm about 2 miles west of Bishop, and that's where we went to the first day. The reason we came to Bishop, farming had just opened up down here in those days, and my granddad had bought a section of land over here out of Sutton. And mother's brother had bought a farm in Bishop, and they kept writing us to come down. The farm was good. Well, we got down there in 1916, right before Christmas, and it had a storm in 1916, and it was bad, and the crops were bad, they didn't make anything. In 1718 and 19, and 1718 was drought, and we didn't make anything. And in 1919, then another storm hit, and that's when they washed Corpus Christi away. And I went to Corpus Christi after that, about a month after the storm. And you can see, I still see signs of this tar. A ship loaded with tar and oil had broken open out in the gut and washed ashore. And it's got all the people, and you can tell one person from another, it's all black. And a lot of people rushed from Corpus Christi to here to Odom. And they woke up to people's houses. Some men survived the trip across the bay. on a raft or something, or floor of a house. They woke up these people's houses here, and it scared them the first time. See, it scared them to death, and they realized, you know, they told them, well, they got to looking for people in, you know, what's to come. We had some friends that was drowned in the 1919 storm. They lived on North Beach, a beautiful home, but North Beach at that time was pretty, but after the storm, there wasn't anything left. It never has been the same since. But telephone, we had a royal telephone, and operators, we called her Central in those times. It was downtown there, and of course, everybody's on the party line. You're lucky if you make get your call through. Or somebody long-winded, half an hour, you know. And my brother used to, he knew the telephone operator. He kind of sweet on him. He used to move the well-known Sears and Roebuck phonograph. He'd pull that thing over the phone, and this girl, he'd sit there and play this records through over the phone. It was really funny. He'd play it, and I don't know if he'd take calls or not. If anybody wanted on my line, they didn't get on, go. He was playing records too. That's really funny.
Did you have a telegraph office in Bishop?
Oh, gosh, no. You could might have sent one. You could send one from the depot, but you could send a telegram from the depot. They had to crack it out over on those tobacco can thing. But no telegraph office. There wasn't any telegraph office in Kingsville for a long time except the depot. That's where you had to go to send telegrams. And I don't mind going like that again. It's wonderful to me. And I don't mind y'all get used to it, but to me it's a lot of fun.
There's another question that I wanted to ask you about F.C. Bishop as to why he did go bankrupt. You mentioned
that. Oh, Mr. Bishop went out to the community, call it now, Los Angeles, Texas, out here west of San Antonio. It's a drought area, and they have to irrigate. And he went out there and made some bad investments and couldn't sell the land, and so had all his money involved, and his creditors got in on him, see, and just absolutely broke him. So he was he put hogs in, he started hogs in Texas, and he was really used to run special trains down there from the north, from the west, east, you know. And honey, I never drank that, and he'd eat it for me, and he would. He was a fine man, Mr. Bishop was. I hate it because he died like he did, but he was a good man. And his brother was night watchman, and Bishop, E.A. Bishop, was night watchman there for years. What else I want to say? I forgot what it was. I
heard about something about the kings and Kennedys opposing a road from Bishop to the Valley.
Yeah.
Could you tell us something about that?
Sure. I used to. You go south from Bishop, you want to go to the valley. When you got to little town of Revere, about 200 yards other side of Revere, there's a red, what we call a red gate, and a fence there, and that's the end of the line. If you want to go into the valley, then why, you'd cut across a pasture there to Palfurious and straight south to Far. Then you had to come back, see, to get to Harlingen or Brownsville. But, they tried, Mr. Kennedy wouldn't let anybody through his ranch. So it wasn't until 1930-something, or maybe 1940, when the state got busy and forced him to give him a right-of-way through his ranch. So then they built a paved road through the ranch, you see. But no, you couldn't, he wasn't about to get on his ranch. In fact, he didn't want anybody on there. And, but they forced him to, through litigation, you know, to give them right away. Of course, they had to buy it. But they had some men appraise the value of the land, and they paid him accordingly. And so that really, really was rough on everybody going to the valley, because you could go to Alice and down, or you could go to Palfurious and down, see? But
well,
you couldn't go straight
we
through.
Heard that they had opposed Mr. Bishop, because Mr. Bishop favored it, and that this was one reason that they tried to break him financially. Does that hold water, or?
I never did hear that. I think when he went broke when he went out there and tried to develop that drill wells and everything, you know, Los Angeles, Texas. And it's a lot of people farming over there now, but that's what broke Mr. Bishop. He had had too much invested and couldn't sell the land, you see. So he just absolutely, well, it's like anybody that overspends or can't get the money back, they're going broke.
Was there something else that you wanted to...
Well, I thought about something more ago, and I can't think.
Both practices, that is, if you didn't have doctors, what did you do for medicine? What were some of the things, for example, we'd like to...
Well, there wasn't anything you could do. The doctor, there's only one doctor, and he'd make you if he could. He'd work day and night, you see. But, there just wasn't anything you could do. There was only one man available, and he just ran himself to death trying to get around everybody. And that's the same way during World War II, though. We only had one doctor, Dr. Pease. And he worked himself to death. But it's terrible in 1918. Our whole family was sick at one time, and everybody in bed, mom and dad and all of us. But the doctor came around, but he didn't get around but once. And about the only medicine they knew in those days was calomel. And if you wasn't careful, if you take too much calomel, it salivates in your mouth, it all gets sore, you know. A lot of people were around with a salivated mouth, I'll tell you.
What is that?
Calomel is kind of a... I don't know what it is. Did you ever take calomel? Oh, ask some doctor. I don't know, but how to explain. This is the pill medicine. You see, that's all they use, calomel. That's
well,
give everybody. Huh. Ask Dr. Graham what calomel is and tell him I told you. To ask him.
He's so busy.
He'll tell you.
He's a nice man.
But, I swear, calomel. Of course, I don't think the doctors even prescribe it. I know they don't. But what are you going to do? You got to do the best you can. That's all I have. See?
Maybe you could describe some of the weddings and things of this sort during that time. What did you do with your wife?
You know, I don't remember ever going to weddings.
Was it that they didn't have them? Or?
Oh, they had them, but they didn't have elaborate weddings like they do now. I guess, because I don't remember the way we're going to the wedding time.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Whitten, do you remember the election of 1928? You know it.
When Al Smith ran against, oh yeah, sure did.
Could you tell us about that? Did you vote wet or dry?
1928, let's see. Yeah, I guess I could vote to him. That wasn't 28 when they voted liquor back in. It was 32 when they voted prohibition, and Roosevelt got it put back in. Al Smith was a Catholic, you see, and that's what beat him. It praised his people, so he beat him because Herbert Hoover ran against him, and they had a convention in Houston, and nominated Al Smith, and of course everybody said he couldn't win because he was Catholic. And that's really what happened. Because he was Catholic, he couldn't, he didn't win. But Herbert Hoover won, and I remember I voted in that election, but to tell you the truth about it, I don't, well, I voted. My granddaddy wouldn't vote. He said he couldn't vote. He set that one out. And so I might have set it out too. I really don't remember by how I voted and didn't vote. But I voted Franklin Roosevelt in 32. Voted for him every time he ran. But I don't possess any. I ran on a Democratic ticket 7 times, but I didn't vote Democratic every time. I split my ticket. I vote for the man now.
Right.
I'm not prejudiced enough to think there's only one party. In fact, I voted for Nixon. And I voted for Wallace one time. I voted for him again to be run. But I don't vote for the party anymore. That don't mean anything to me. A party don't. Party label. I mean, the thing in the world, you ought to vote for the man, that's the way I would try to vote.